listening to The Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three relatively grown men binge the iconic HBO series Sex and the City. So dust off those DVDs and grab yourself a white wine or even a Cosmopolitan and settle in. Take it away, boys.
Welcome to the Bradshaw Boys, a podcast where three guys are watching romantic comedies. I'm Corey Cavan.
My name is John Sieber, and we're joined by with Mr. Elephant, who sings "If You're Happy." No, who sings "Do Your Ears Hang Low?" And also Clappy the Monkey, who sings "If You're Happy and You Know It, Clap Your Hands."
That's great. I'm glad they joined us today.
Yeah, because Kevin's gone.
Kevin's gone. So we had the stuffed animals that I'm guessing for your family sit in.
Yep, they are. They're my stuffed animals.
Oh, they're yours.
They're not my sons. After a long, hard day's work, I just sometimes need to hear "Do Your Ears Hang Low" from the elephant.
That's great. It's a question that we all need to hear sometimes, just, you know, so we can...
if your ears really de-stress. Did hang that low where you could tie them in a knot and tie them in a bow and you were a human,
yeah,
you would probably get bullied a lot.
You know, I bet the people whose ears do hang low like that are the people, the punk rockers that got the big spacers and now their earlobes are just hanging low. That's the people that need
them. They're like young professionals on the subway and a kid's listening to that song and they're like all down and out.
They're just like, oh man.
Our just raggedy old wizard sleeve ears do hang low.
Well, speaking of people on the subway,
yes,
going to jobs, and people whose ears are hanging low that may be wearing fashionable earrings today.
Ooh.
Today,
yeah,
we have a journey that we are starting about work and fashion.
Yeah,
a great movie
and the big city, big
city of New York,
and the hustle,
the bustle, the trussles? I don't know if it's a trussle.
There's trussles in there.
What's the thing that you tie up the
ears? Your ears.
Your ears.
And whenever you need to tie something, it's with your ears.
I was thinking of like a bodice is what I'm thinking of. Something like that. It has to do with dresses.
Yeah.
I guess hopefully we're going to learn a lot of stuff. We're watching Devil Wears Prada today.
The devil? Is it devil or the devil?
The Devil Wears Prada.
The Devil Wears Prada.
Prada.
My first question is, have you seen The Devil Wears Prada?
This is a movie that we have done that is special because I've seen this movie at least 5, maybe 10 times.
Really?
For a while, I would be like, I love that movie. And then I watched it on a plane a couple of years ago and I was like, I hate that movie. And then I watched it again and I was like, okay, I kind of get it. So I've like made it around.
Dude, you've oscillated.
Yeah, I've made it around the bases with
it. Did you notice that? Have you ever noticed that oscillate was a big COVID word? Pivot. It was pivot for a while.
Interesting.
And then like when you're, what is that? Oh, geez.
It's a frozen water bottle. Yeah. I was rubbing my heel on it.
That scared the crap.
Sorry about that.
I oscillated from happiness to sheer terror.
It really did.
Quickly.
And now you're back to happiness.
Anyway, I feel like oscillate took over pivot, but.
Also, I think liminal was a big COVID word. Ooh, did you hear that one?
Yeah.
Liminal space.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're in kind of a liminal space right now. You know, you're working, but you're also at home and you're on Zoom. So, you know, there's a lot of liminality in the world.
I've seen this movie probably 5 to 10 times as
Have
well.
You really?
Yeah, and I never left this movie's side. I really enjoy this movie.
Wow.
I have none of the references make any sense.
Okay.
I don't know any of the we're probably the two worst people to discuss this movie because I know zero about fashion.
Yep.
I think I care about fashion.
Interesting.
I'm not sure. I need to think about whether or not I think I care about fashion.
Why would you say you think you care about fashion? I have a reason why, and I don't mean it with any shade, but I have a reason why I would think you don't care about fashion.
I am not a fashionable person.
Okay.
And I don't desire to like wear fashionable clothing.
Yep.
But I like appreciate greatness.
Okay.
And like, I appreciate like art. And I appreciate like someone's sending a message.
Uh-huh.
And so like there's a lot of those like things that, and I appreciate things I don't understand a lot.
I would say all those things, someone who knows you, I'd say all those things are true. Like you definitely appreciate other art forms.
Totally.
Like that. Yeah.
And so like fashion is just one that I haven't explored yet. And it's like low on my totem pole of things that I will personally engage with.
Uh-huh.
But like I've like watched documentaries on fashion.
Yeah.
I've like gone to like the House of Z. Was that one? Like that? Was that a big one?
Maybe. That's where I know some of it, and then I fall apart a little bit.
And like, I'll check out, like, so I'm curious about it, but yeah, like, I don't know anything about it. I, you know.
Yeah. I would say same. I actually did a couple of years ago take a fashion class online because I was really interested in how it works. And I did not finish it. It was taught through MoMA, but
okay,
it was the history of fashion, and they did it through 50 different clothing pieces.
Oh, but whoa.
So it was really interesting. It was like a white t-shirt and jeans, and like how that's come through the 50s and how that made it through America. And
did they start with like, is this all like Western fashion?
I think,
or did
it's
they...
modern Western.
Okay. Yeah. So they're not like starting with like the toga.
No.
It like was, this is like the fig leaf.
Yeah. I think it started in late 1800s, maybe okay, early 1900s, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it'd be great. The fig leaf, popularized by Adam after the fall.
Yeah, after when he became embarrassed by his dingle donger.
God asked him, who told you needed clothes? And he was like, girl, we all need clothes. And then he brought out a Vogue. Yeah. I mean, I'm interested in it. But not, I've never felt, I mean, like, look, watching our videos, like, you know, we're the Bradshaw Boys. We're, yeah, just, we're dudes, you know. Yeah. I've never felt like we know some people who are like fashion people. I've never felt like a fashion person.
No.
I've been to a fashion show at Fashion Week, yeah, or work one time. I know a little bit about it, and I'm interested in it. I would say the same way as you are,
yeah,
but as an industry, it's not the first one,
yeah,
that's piquing my interest and I'm chasing after in terms of wanting to know what's going on all the time.
Exactly.
But I, yeah, do think it's super fascinating.
Yeah, totally.
And there's some things that we'll talk about in this movie.
Can't wait.
Oh man, I know. But there's some things that, such enlightening things about how fashion works, like as an industry, and how that influences culture. And another thing that is that, I don't know if you've watched this movie in the past couple of years.
I don't think it's been probably 5 years.
Okay. Yeah. Well, a different point of view we're going to have watching this, all the costumes done by Patricia Field.
Oh.
Very.
Holy shit.
Totally, right?
I heard. So when I told Katie we were watching this.
Yeah.
First of all, it's like, this is like one of her favorite movies.
Yeah.
Like, just, I think, like, for someone like Katie, if you just like toss Meryl Streep and Stanley Tucci into like a screen, it doesn't matter what it is. Like, yeah, they, like, you know, Katie's type will like it.
Yeah, totally.
And by Katie's type, I would just mean a basic white girl.
also someone who's in a musical theater,
yeah,
and it's in a musical theater, yeah, actress.
Exactly. Totally. But she said,
but also like, someone who loves like pumpkin spice latte.
Exactly.
You know, yeah, just totally. Basic white girl.
Just she just said that. She's like, you have to tell the podcast this. Anne Hathaway sat next to Anna Wintour at like a fashion show and Fashion Week and wore an outfit that her character wore on Devil's Word Prada. And it was like a big deal. Did you hear that?
I didn't hear that. Yeah. I bet we could look that up.
Yeah. We're going to fact check that on the break.
Let's do just a bit of rundown before.
Okay.
Because I think we're going to have a lot to talk about after we watch that. We're going to watch the first third.
Yeah.
A bit of rundown before. This movie came out in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So
height of Adrian Grenier's popularity.
Yeah. This is like big time Entourage time, right?
This is like they're rolling out the red carpet to get him on set.
This is around like when I was around when I moved to New York.
Yeah.
And my buddy worked in production and had worked on things with him. And
oh,
he was,
man,
like, and yeah, it was like a huge deal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, still a big famous actor.
Yeah.
This is like Entourage was huge at this,
yeah,
point. Yeah, totally. So 2006, $35 million budget, $35 wow, to $41 million.
How budget. Big is that in 2006 days?
I think that's pretty big because I'm guessing adjusting for inflation, that's close to like maybe a $50 million movie.
Okay.
That's a pretty big movie.
Pretty big movie.
Pretty big studio movie. The director, David Frankel, also directed Marley and Me.
Oh.
Yeah. That's like setting the scene and
filmed in New York,
you know, about her working at Vogue.
This is like 4 years after the end of Sex and the City.
No, it's closer because Sex and the City
ended like 2002 or 2003.
Oh, no, maybe you're right. Hold on.
So this is, but this movie feels post, it feels like a different.
Agreed.
Sex and the City, New York still feels like, do you measure New York in like 9/11 terms?
So,
like pre and post 9/11?
Well, it's hard. Okay. So Sex and the City concluded in 04.
Oh, so this is 2 years
this
after
is 2 years
end
after.
Of Sex and the City.
And then the movies, let's see, Sex and the City 1 came out in 08. So it came, so the movies came after this, but this okay. is, but so this is a post Sex and the City world.
Uh-huh.
And post Sex and the City world and, or post Sex and the City New York, I would say definitely influenced by it, but this is, I think the movie is, I mean, it's based on a book,
okay,
but the movie is coming out in the world where people have started already moved to New York because of Sex and the City.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like the Sex and the Cityfication of New York has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's like a younger, it's if I remember, I mean, they're, Anne Hathaway's character is like a recent college grad.
I think she's like just out of college.
And so like, this is not the same demo as the Sex and the City women at in the end of 2004.
No, she's, they I think Anne Hathaway.
Established professionals.
Totally.
Business owners, Upper East Side.
Yeah.
Classic Five.
Yeah. Classic Six.
Classic Six dwellers.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's
classic five though. The four ladies and the fifth character is New York. That's the classic.
That's five. The classic five.
I mean, but this is more of the, we're all moving to New York to make it movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, she's right out of college, gets the big internship, like that kind of thing.
And that New York, I love. Oh, I love, dude, cause I think everyone who has come here and tried to make it has experienced a lot of, I think, what I remember in this movie.
Well, so you were asking like, what are my New York terms? Mine is post Brooklyn Bridge. Before it was built, totally different city. I'm just kidding. No, mine is
Robert Moses. It all starts with Robert Moses. Power Broker right over there.
Oh, there you go. On the shelf.
I need to read that.
Mine is, I mean, yes, it's post 9/11, but I grew up watching SNL and David Letterman.
Yeah.
So I remember that idealized version of New York.
The closing of the Howie G Deli, is that Hello Deli?
Still there, bro.
Is it still open?
Oh, when I worked above there, I'd go down and talk to Rupert all the time.
What?
And like once or twice was just like, hey man, I just want to say like, what's weird, because you know, like you are there every day because my office was above there.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know if I ever did the like, I just need to say, man, I grew up watching you. But I did do kind of a like, thanks, Rupert. Like, I really appreciate it, man. But yeah, he's still there.
Oh,
I don't know if they're there post-COVID. I bet they are, though.
Yeah.
But they would only open when The Late Show was shooting.
Okay.
They would close. But no, my New York is probably post-2003-ish,
yeah,
because that's around the time that I was like, I think I could really move there. And then I moved there a little bit after that.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you?
I mean, I moved to New York in 2010 and I started like seriously like circling the waters in 2008.
Okay.
So like that's the New York I moved to.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of fashion, I just saw J. Crew had their fashion week show and they were like, the write up was they had the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, this band played and they were saying, they were saying the J. Crew vibe for this season is that it's like 2005 all over again.
And everything, it's all cyclical.
As we'll probably see.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to dive into this movie. I think it's going to be super fun. What do you think?
I'm excited. Let's watch the first third of it. Katie, take us away.
The Devil Wears Prada, directed by David Frankel. Andy, played by Anne Hathaway, is a recent college graduate with big dreams. Upon landing a job at prestigious runway magazine, she finds herself the assistant to diabolical editor Miranda Priestley, played by Meryl Streep. Andy questions her ability to survive her grim tour as Miranda's whipping girl without getting scorched. And now, back to the boys.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast, called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Suddenly I see.
What is that of heaven?
Suddenly I see.
Why the hell it means so much,
dude,
me?
When that song plays, you bop. You just bop.
I don't care
where you are.
Who you are.
Who you are.
Where you
are. What you've had for dinner.
What you ate.
Yeah, like anything. It does not matter.
You know, we said before we went away to watch the beginning of this, like 2005 is back. Dude, watching that opening montage, I was like, I am ready for it.
Putting on the undies.
Dude, yes.
That's like, I gotta be careful how I word this thought.
It's always super fun to get into.
It's like a real trad, like, you know, let's play the world's smallest violin for a lot of things that men have missed out on.
Yeah.
But like fun undies, like we don't really have fun undies. We got boxers and like, you know.
Me Undies is trying to do it. Me Undies sponsor the podcast. But yeah, they're trying to do it. But you're right.
But like there's like lace and texture.
Little bow on the front.
And it's like.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of different types of underwear and I've never felt as fun as watching that scene.
We should ask a female guest sometime, like, is it fun? Because it seems fun.
Yeah.
Have you ever been a briefs guy?
No. I mean, when I was like forced to wear briefs when I was younger.
Yeah. I went through an adult briefs phase for a little while.
Are you in it right now?
No, I'm not in it. I thought, but you know what's funny is I thought about it the other day because sometimes I get a little shift in the boxer briefs and I have to like straighten
the monkey,
out.
You do the monkey walk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Or,
to where I've been asked like, are you good? And I was like, I bet with briefs, less of a shift.
I have a dear friend of mine that is like diehard brief person.
Yeah.
We used to go to the bathhouse a lot together.
Mm-hmm.
And like every single time the briefs were exposed, it was like, whoa, like just kind of caught me off
guard. It's jarring.
Yeah.
If you're going to be, we'll get to the movie in a sec, but if you're going to be an adult briefs guy, especially depending on what age you are, but if you're going to be an adult briefs guy in your 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever, you can't go whites. Like you gotta have colors.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you go whites, they gotta probably be like expensive whites.
You
can't just go BVDs.
Yeah. Do adult Fruit of the Looms. Adult brief. We need to get someone on the pod that's an adult brief male.
Yeah.
Do they?
I'll say this. I don't want to out him, but we've had one.
Really?
Yeah, we've had one.
Huh. I'm thinking right now about who. Do you tell a date before you get intimate like that?
I'm a brief guy.
I just want to tell you before the appetizers come a little bit about who I am and what I choose to do with my body.
I'm not
body.
Saying anything's going to happen tonight,
yeah.
But if something does happen, you need to know.
Right. And they're like, it's okay. I've seen an uncircumcised penis. But No. It's not that.
I'm circumcised. I'm actually extra circumcised. Yeah. There's way more stuff.
They
going.
Cut off an extra stick. I am a gentleman who wears briefs.
What?
briefs.
Check, please.
Check, please. Suddenly I see.
All right, let's get in the recap. We got a lot to talk.
Devil Wears Prada.
Devil Wears Prada. Okay. If I missed stuff, let me know. But beginning of the movie, we have that incredible montage that's just, first off, a great New York City going to work movie montage. It also serves to show, you know, like you said, ladies wearing fun undies. Mm-hmm. And then Andy, our protagonist.
Mm-hmm. Wearing granny panties.
Putting on granny panties, looking at him, being like, what are these ones? Grabbing some
smelling
other
smelling them, being like, oh, not that pair.
Exactly. Be like, oh, well, these are less dirty. I'll put these on after I power walked with ankle weights yesterday.
She parachutes with them out of her apartment and puts them on.
So Andy just, you know, getting
Chippendales Rescue Rangers, and she just jumps out of her flat
when there's danger.
Yeah, just do, and then gets down to the street butt naked, puts on her parachute undies, disappoints Stanley Tucci, and that's how the movie starts.
That's how it is. Exactly. She's housing two bagels and like a milkshake,
an onion bagel.
Exactly.
Hey, you.
Okay.
A morning milkshake.
She's got a full-on caramel chocolate milkshake.
Waiting in line at Shake Shack from 7 a.m. milkshake.
Let me also get a, can I get a double stack as well? I'll take a smokestack. Let me get that with the cherry hot peppers.
Geez.
All right. So yeah. Okay. So she's going to work. All these other girls, you know, they're kissing their square jawed boyfriends goodbye. Yeah. She also has a square jawed boyfriend.
Yeah.
The star of Medellin.
Yeah. Aquaman.
Yeah. But was he the first Aquaman?
I think he plays Aquaman in Entourage.
Okay.
He like lands the superhero role. And they were making fun of it at the time, but little they know that.
Like, little they know, like
every movie would be a superhero movie.
Exactly. But yeah, so she's riding the subway to work. She's got some random interview at Elias Clark, and she's like, I got this interview I got to go to. And he's like, good luck. And then all the other girls are hailing cabs. Mm-hmm. She gets to Elias Clark, goes up, and sees Emily Blunt. And
whose character's name is Emily?
No,
it's because Andy is Anne Hathaway.
Andy is Anne Hathaway.
Emily Blunt's character is Emily.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So she starts calling her Emily. Miranda Priestley starts calling her Emily.
Yeah.
So maybe she just calls all her people Emily.
Yeah.
So Emily Blunt gets there and she's just like, you know, basically you're here. You have like, Emily Charlton, senior assistant. You job of a lifetime. Most other girls don't last, you know, more than a couple days here. And, somehow you got this, you look terrible, and everyone
goes on the offensive right away. You look like hot garbage.
Exactly.
Your breath smells like
onion dirt, bagel.
Onion bagel.
Exactly. Granny panties.
Yeah. You have a shit stain on your granny panties.
Exactly. Get these Shake Shack cups out of here.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh no, she's early. And Miranda Priestley, you see the entire office flip out. Mm. And, Miranda Priestley arrives, you see how much power this woman holds and how much everyone's scared of her. Mm. And then Andy goes in to say who she is. Miranda just kind of, you know, basically just dismisses her.
Yeah.
So that's the world she's living in. And then you meet her friends. They go out to dinner. They do a chat and chew. Mm. Perfect, just classic like New York Friends.
Oh,
where
yeah.
It's where, you know,
you don't know who Miranda Priestley is?
Oh, what's your deal? Well, I want to be a writer. Yeah. Well, you better learn about fashion now, toots. And but then her boyfriend is, you know, you're working at a good restaurant, and or however Adrian can ear talks, I don't know. And then Rich Summer from Mad Men.
Yeah.
He's like, I have a good job. Just kidding, my job sucks.
Yeah.
And then their other friend, she works at an art gallery, and they're like, what do you do? But definitely like, we're living the dream in New York, mm-hmm. and we're at a restaurant that's closing down, but they're letting us stay. Cheers to jobs that pay.
Right.
And then we go. Oh, and also I didn't realize this the other times I've watched it, but they're getting ready for the September issue, which is a huge thing at Vogue magazine. And so,
yeah, there's a couple like things that are made really obviously clear after watching it this time.
Yeah.
They're like, she's like, this is the book. It's like going to be an important thing.
You need to drop it off at Miranda's.
Drop it off, exactly. She doesn't trust you, so I'm going to do it. And then she's like, also, you're going to run all the errands, but I'm going to go to Paris. Like,
right.
Like
I noticed that too.
They are very over the top, obviously, mentioned the book in Paris, which is interesting because the first time you watch the movie, it doesn't seem as obvious. But now that I've seen a bunch and know what happens.
Yep, totally.
They hit you over the head with that.
That's like dropped so hard that it's like you do all these things, you have to do this. And one of my great things about my job is I get to go to Fashion Week and wear all the clothes.
Which if you're like an aspiring movie writer, you could probably take a cue from like how obvious that is drop. Like,
totally. It's it's such, there's so much good formulaic stuff going
on. Oh my gosh.
That really is set up.
You meet Tucci in the office.
Yep. You meet Tucci, who is her who is some sort of important guy that Miranda listens to. Mm. We have the big scene that we should talk about, the cerulean blue sweater scene where Andy is clearly out of her depth. She's answering the phone and someone, you know, you hear her say, how do you spell Gabbana? And they hang up. And then we have the famous blue sweater scene where, you know, she laughs and she's like, those belts look the same to me. And she's like, oh, and she's like, I just don't understand this stuff. And, you know, she says, what is this stuff to you?
Yeah.
Goes through the whole thing about how.
Which is pretty, like, Andy is a smart person.
Yeah.
She was like the editor of her, like, catalog that she made at Northwestern Ivy League school. Like, she should know to like not to just flippantly like use words like that.
They're really making her into like a rough and tumble smart female mouth breather.
Exactly.
That's just like, I don't know, I want to cover hard news.
Yeah.
You know, but again, like you said, they're really hitting you over the head with a lot of stuff to set the table.
What is it? Stuff? What is this stuff?
What is this stuff?
Great scene. Probably. I got
some good stories about that scene.
I can't wait. For those of you listening.
Well, wait, let's finish the summary.
Okay.
I was just going to say,
depending on how open you as a human being want to be.
Sure.
This could potentially be the best episode of Friends Boys you've ever had. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Okay. We can get to that.
Depending on how open you want to be.
Sure. I too wear granny panties. I'm not a grief guy. I'm a granny panty guy. Okay. So then other things, she gets sent on all these crazy errands. You just see how insane her job is. She goes out to dinner with her dad.
She's like trying to book a flight in a hurricane.
Yep. And then she fails. You know, Miranda doesn't get to see her twins' recital. Also, Miranda just always tosses her coat and bag like at her.
Yeah.
And then, and she also goes home. One of my favorite scenes. She also goes home to Adrian Grenier and she's just talking to him about like, and then these girls, they laugh at me and all this stuff. And then she doesn't want to eat the grilled cheese because she doesn't want to gain weight because they're all skinny.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, there's like $8 worth of Jarlsberg in there. There's
so much money and they spend good cheese.
Yeah, he's so cast as like Chef
Steve.
Bro.
Yeah, he's just Steve.
He's Steve. Yeah. He is. And then she gets really, basically Miranda kind of dresses her down and you think she's going to fire her.
Right.
But she's just like, you know, I hired you because you were smart.
You're different than the other girls.
Yeah. And you have disappointed me maybe more than them. And then she talks to the Tooch and the Tooch is like, quit. He's so good in this movie.
Oh my gosh.
And he's just like, quit. You know, why don't you walk away? Why don't you give up? Basically she's looking for sympathy and he's like, you know, you are pretending like none of this matters. If you really want to do a good job, do a good job.
Yeah. You don't get simp from Tooch.
No. Tooch don't give no simp.
I love Tooch. I love Tooch and Streep working together.
Yeah.
Do you think they just hate each other in real life? Yeah, I don't. How awesome would that be?
That'd be amazing if the camera cuts, he's like, shut up, Meryl.
They have like the best friend chemistry. They're like, what do you call that chemistry? Because it's not like romantic chemistry. It's just like,
I think it's just chemistry.
Has there ever been a movie with Streep, Tooch, and Hanks all like sharing screen time together? Because that would just be like, they're just like, you trust them, you like them, you want to be there with them. Mm-hmm. But a man, I would love it when the camera stops rolling, if he's just throwing hands at Streep. Just
throws that belt at her head.
Yeah.
And then the last thing that happens is Tooch gives her a makeover in the runway closet. Mm. All this clothes, they're all samples. And And then she goes and sees Adrian after work and her boyfriend. And he's like, we got to get out of here before my girlfriend finds me. Yeah. And then she's now in the thing where she's like, I'm going to try.
Yeah.
You know, and also all the girls at work now are like, oh, my gosh, you look good.
Look how great she looks.
Yeah.
There's like a, this isn't, doesn't have to be a talking point. It's just more an observation. But like when you watch a movie like this that is 16 years old, there's like a lot of like fat shaming.
Oh, so much. Well, there's one thing that
like feels really dated from something that would be made nowadays.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that God, there's so much to talk about. But one thing I do want to talk about, and then we can get to what you were saying a second ago, is that there is like an archetype that she is, which is the girl who's not fat, but is like fat shamed and is you know, sort of not coerced, but is like, does go to the side of, I like fashion and I'm going to try to be hot and all this stuff. Even though, you know, by the end she will make the full
spoiler
cycle,
alert.
Maybe, who knows? But what's funny is you get to like the mid 2000s in New York. Popular shows were Broad City, stuff like that. And that was more when it was like shows, comedy shows like that were embracing the struggle the whole time and not, and it was like, they were the pre-Andy. They were not the Andy that ended up like buying in.
Yeah.
It was more, there was more of a lovable thing of the female character being like, I'm not gonna, like, I don't know. I don't know about fashion.
Right.
I'm an idiot. And I think that changed, but I feel like that is maybe coming back now. Like I would wonder to see if it's almost like a, we've made the full circle of, you could have it both. You could have it to where it's like, yeah, I am like funny and don't know about fashion, but also I do. And I like will get dressed.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if that's coming back.
It's kind of interesting because like if you watch like a movie or a TV show nowadays, I think they would probably censor a lot of that stuff. Like they wouldn't have the character call her fat or frumpy.
Right.
Like, cause they wouldn't want to like portray, but like, I bet that stuff still really happens in the workplace and like to a lot of like normal, healthy looking size 6 or 8 or whatever she was like females. And I wonder if it's like making it more, if it's more damaging because it's been stripped away from so much popular media. And then when it happens, they're like, it's that much more harmful. Where back then, you know, it was truly shown. I don't know. I think like then you put like the chicken ahead of the egg and it's like, which one causes more damage?
Yeah.
I don't,
I mean,
we're probably in a better spot now, but that was just a dumb thought.
I do think from working in media, I do. So this is what we can talk about. So like you said, I have direct connection to this movie currently because I work in this world, not in fashion, but very adjacent to fashion and very adjacent to...
He's a cheesemonger is what he's trying to say.
I'm a cheesemonger.
Corey went from an Emmy award winning producer to a cheesemonger.
Yeah. I would be the guy that would get Adrian Grenier his Jarlsberg.
Yeah.
No, I work in media. For a big parent company that is like what is portrayed in this movie, very closely to this kind of thing, and have seen this kind of thing, and it's fascinating to watch it now.
I bet
very different industry because at this time, you know, 2006, it's magazines, and now magazine industry is, you know, it's a industry that's trying to make media,
right,
and nobody buys magazines, but then also some people do buy, like, I would say Vogue is one that is like always going to be, I mean, Runway's based on Vogue, but like, it's always going to be, it is a magazine that people will buy, but they're also trying to pivot all this stuff. But that is, anyway, all that to say, like you said, that is the world that I am in, you know, around.
What is it? What are some of the things, and maybe this would be a conversation better to have at the end when we watch the whole movie in part 3, but I'd be curious to hear like of the things that you see, like which one, like what's the truth? What's embellished? What is like,
I'll tell you one thing that was definitely true.
What?
When she goes downstairs and her and the teacher in the cafeteria and she's getting that corn soup. Same exact soup things in the cafeteria.
Really?
I will say, weirdly, that scene, I was like, this is totally like Media World cafeteria. There is a huge cafeteria where all the different media brands go down. I know that's like the least interesting thing, but that was a very real thing where she's like, you have 15 minutes to go down and get lunch. That's like where people congregate. And like, you see, you know, the fashion. I had a friend that worked at Hearst for a while, which is another big magazine publisher. And like, you see all the like young fashion interns going down to like, get their stuff before they go back up to their desks and stuff like that. I mean, it's also weird because it's post-pandemic now.
Yeah.
Because like people aren't in the office all the time.
Right.
But like that, I don't think there's a giant closet like she goes into.
Okay.
But there is some stuff up, you know, on those floors like that. And I do know that around the time when it's like the Met Gala or they're doing the September issue thing here. It's very busy. Mm-hmm. Like it's definitely crunch time. And I know people that have worked on like a lot of the like gala video stuff. It's tons of, it's very high pressure. I bet that it's like, like you said, I don't think it's like as mean anymore.
Right.
Cause I do think media has kind of changed where people are like, you know, they don't want to get canceled or something,
right?
You know,
yeah.
For like yelling or throwing a shoe at someone or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's probably not as mean.
It's probably like a lot of passive aggressive and
totally.
I imagine like underhanded comments and
yeah.
Like I bet. So this might be an interesting time to transition. This movie is written about Anna Wintour. Like the main character is supposed to be the chief editor chief of Vogue, Anna Wintour.
Yes,
right?
Totally.
Now I wonder if like
there's a great Letterman interview where he's talking to Anna Wintour about that.
About this
movie.
What does she say?
He says he's like, forget you should we should look it up, but like I don't remember verbatim, but he's like, have you seen it? And like this movie kind of paints you as not the, you know, nicest person or, you know, that thing. And
yeah,
he's like, what do you think about that? And she kind of says like, you know, well, it's a movie and it's fiction. And he's like, is it true? And she's kind of like, she basically just kind of like, you know, it's a movie, but I don't know. And he's like, you don't seem like you're really denying anything. And she's like, yeah, maybe. So she's very like, I think she's just very much like, I don't know. They can say what they want to say, but you kind of get the vibe that like it's embellished, but also she kind of doesn't care.
Yeah. I think that there, this is coming from someone who knows nothing about her. So yeah. I'm just shooting from the hip. She's clearly like a genius.
Yeah.
She's clearly like a light years ahead visionary.
Mm-hmm.
And she is like a creative force.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a thing of like, I know what I want. I think she might even said this in the interview. She's like, I know what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And I have very strong opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it to happen a certain way. And I just like people who I can work with who understand that vision.
Yeah.
And I want to get that stuff done.
I think when you are dealing with like once in a generational people like her, and like you can fill in the blank of other celebrities that are probably like this, whether it's like Mozart to Kanye,
Sounds like a celebrity. Mozart to Kanye. He's a painter. Mozart to Kanye.
I think there's like, there's a pass that you have to give someone who's like so full of creativity and like drive and knowledge of what they want.
Yeah.
That like, yeah, they're going to be lacking in other areas of their life. They're going to be, they're not going to be social. They're probably going to come off crusty.
Yeah.
They're going to like, when you know what you want and other people are perceived as just getting in your way.
Yeah.
Like, of course they're not going to be kind. Like they're roadblocks.
And totally.
So I imagine that she is probably like a person like that.
Yeah.
And then they took this kid, they took that trait of her, not necessarily mean, not necessarily nasty, just a person speed walking through Times Square.
Yeah.
Except in all areas of her life. And then they just like embellished it to make her actually nasty. Like,
yeah.
What's Meryl Streep's character's name?
Miranda Priestly.
Miranda Priestly is actually like just a net yes. human.
Yes. And I will say from like what I've seen in real life, I've never seen a display anywhere mm-hmm. directly in front of me that I'm just like, ooh,
dude,
that was nasty.
Like there's an opening. Dude, I want you to walk
you in. Want me to do it?
I want you to walk in Wednesday dude. And just blast your bag.
Toss my coat on someone's desk. Friggin',
like wind up, spin around like you're throwing discus. and then just.
Why is my Starbucks not here? Yeah. I don't understand it. Why?
Why? Yeah. Just discus your bag right in their face and walk into your office and slam the door shut.
Why is nobody ready? One of my favorite lines in the movie. Why is nobody ready? Yeah. I should totally do that. I don't even have an office. Just walk onto set and walk onto set, toss my bag down.
You have to have some sort of underling you can just blast with your bag.
Totally. Oh, I could find someone.
If not, hire me and you can.
You come on set. And which is great because you're like a foot taller than me. I just toss my coat over your head.
Yeah. I'll fall down.
And then if I get you, I also got to get a tooch.
Yeah. Ooh.
I'll get Kevin to put on some glasses. Kevin can be the tooch.
Kevin is, yeah. He does resemble the tooch.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean,
he's bald.
Exactly. That's the only reason. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think, I agree though. I mean, it's the same thing where people like when they really talk about it, it's like Steve Jobs, you know.
Yeah.
I think that there were a lot of stories that came out that was like, you know, not a ray of sunshine all the time to be around because, you know, he's like trying to change technology forever. Totally. So yeah, same thing here, but I've never seen a real life Miranda Priestly toss a bag or a jacket at anyone. Granted, I've also never been in that close of proximity.
Right.
But sometimes. Yeah. I might have walked past Miranda Priestly once or twice.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
This is my connection to this movie.
Yeah.
One time we were looking for a labor attorney and we got introduced to one.
Uh-huh.
His name was like Jerry Hathaway in New Jersey, and his daughter's Anne Hathaway.
Really?
We didn't end up going with him, but hey, whatever, you're Jerry Anthony Greg Hathaway.
Dude.
Thank you for the quote.
I went to the same acting school as Anne Hathaway.
Really?
Yep. And former Bradshaw Boys or friend of the pod, Tony Hale, also went to that acting school. But
successful acting school.
I named two of the top six. There's actually a lot of people that have gone there that and like the main guy, Seth Parrish, is like in tons of stuff.
Huh.
But went to a play with her one time. And like sat in the audience of a play with her. And like I was there with my friend and she was like, it's Anne Hathaway. And she came back for like an alumni play thing.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Seemed cool.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Hathaway facts. Emily Blunt. Emily Blunt. Facts.
Do you have any Blunt connection?
I have a friend that did a movie with her.
Oh yeah.
And it was the movie The Quiet Place.
Yeah.
He was working on that. And
we have like two friends. We have another friend that worked on the post-production of A Quiet
Place.
And
there's the scene where she was like laying in
the tub.
Bathtub. Like it was like the crazy horror scene.
Uh-huh.
And my friend had bought his newborn baby to the set. And she was like laying in the tub and she was like, bring me the baby. Oh. And he said it was like really interesting to see this like crazy horror scene and her just being like super happy and bubbly to see the newborn baby.
That's insane.
Yeah, so I heard she's an incredibly awesome person.
My connection with her.
This is the part of the part of the pod where we just name drop. How
this
cool
is called the Humble Brag. The Humble Bradshaw Boys. My connection is one time Kevin and I walked by a restaurant called Lavara in New York. And we were like, let's see if we can get in. And we got in there and Emily Blunt and John Krasinski. And the girl, Lily Collins, who ended up playing the girl who's in Emily in Paris.
Uh-huh.
And her boyfriend, the four of them were eating dinner at the restaurant.
Was it like the scene in Devil Wears Prada?
It was, they all cheers and they were like, to jobs that pay.
I'm an actor. I'm the random boyfriend. I'm in finance.
And I'm his girlfriend and my father's Phil Collins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the jobs that pay.
Yay. But that's my only connection with her. Trying to think if there's any other connections to anyone else in the movie. Rich Sommer from Mad Men used to do stuff at UCB,
okay,
the comedy theater.
There you go.
And I was a big Mad Men fan.
Yeah, this is just like the so
if there's okay. any if I'll, I'll say this.
Here's what I want to talk about with okay. this movie.
And I'll say this, if there are any other insider tips of the world stuff we're talking about, I'll just throw them in if they come.
Yeah. So as the Bradshaw Boys, we're watching romantic comedies.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen this movie 5 to 10 times.
Yes.
Is this a romantic comedy?
I don't know. I don't think so. I was watching it when we were watching it. I was thinking this feels like a 20s coming of age New York movie.
Yeah.
There is a romance relationship with her boyfriend, and there will be a romance element. I don't know if it's a romantic comedy.
I just think that if I were listing genres of what this movie is, I don't think romance would be one of the words I would use. I don't even know if comedy would be.
No, let me throw this one at you.
Throw it.
Possibly pejorative.
Okay.
So maybe we can't say this anymore. But is it a chick flick?
I mean, I
feel like that term has kind of like died out. Not even just because people are like, don't say chick flick, but also because
if it is, I love chick. Like
I was about to say, that's why I think it's opened up.
I love.
Like, I think chick flicks.
Whatever
have opened up.
The genre of this movie is, I'm all in.
Me too.
It's just like fun. It goes down so easily.
Totally.
Like
you just want so fast.
You just want to watch it anywhere.
Yeah.
Airplane. Like if you are like had a hard day, mm-hmm. if you, it doesn't matter, like this is just good shit.
Yeah.
It's just so good.
Yeah.
I don't think
it's like New York porn.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Like I just want to know. I mean, I'm sure we could just look up what this is classified as, but like I need to watch more movies like this because I watched this movie Midsommar. Have you seen that one?
I saw Midsommar twice in the theater.
I had to go on a walk by myself and like gather my thoughts and just be like, and I came back and I was like seething. I was so just angry that I watched that movie and spent time watching that movie that I'll never get back.
You know that has been suggested by more than one person that we watch that on this podcast.
Let's do it.
As a romantic comedy. I'll
be so mad.
You know that's a movie written about a breakup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I did. And I appreciate that movie. And I don't know if I'm glad that it got made.
Yeah.
But my experience watching Devil's Wears Prada is the exact opposite of my experience with Midsommar. I don't want to need to take a walk by myself.
Yeah.
I want to like put on underwear and then just see my face or whatever that mm-hmm. song is. Mm-hmm. I just want to like go to Chinatown and I want to get an onion bagel and just walk around. Power walk.
Yeah.
Power walk.
Yeah. I will say it does remind me of moving to New York.
Yeah.
Just the romance of
like
my first job.
The energy.
Yes.
The energy of the city.
So much. Which,
the energy of New York City is the most, it's the best thing about New York City.
Absolutely.
It's inspiring. It's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
It's big.
Mm-hmm.
You want to chase it and mm-hmm. experience it. And this movie just like captures it perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does for sure. Like the opening and so many other times during it. When she's out running errands in Soho.
Yeah.
She's having to go to all those places when she bangs those people with that surfboard by accident.
Yeah.
Which I was like, maybe she went and got those at REI.
Yeah.
Or what was that other?
There's the one on 16th Paragon.
Paragon. Maybe it was Paragon.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, it's just such a, such a like specific New York movie that's also broad.
Yeah.
If you've never been here, you would watch it and just think, man, I want to go there.
Yeah.
And living here, it kind of like makes me excited about
it. It does. I want to go like, yeah, normally I dread going into Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
But like, I want to go to Soho right now.
It makes you want. Yeah. It makes you. It's one of those things that kind of makes you want to be in a movie.
Yeah.
You know,
just want to like get a coffee, go to Soho, just walk around.
Yeah. I went to Koreatown today and had lunch with a mutual friend of ours. And
wait, did you go to Wordjip?
Yeah, I went to Wordjip today.
Was it your suggestion or his?
It was mine because you and I talked about it recently.
Oh man.
And I saw it on a bunch of lists of places.
It's so good.
Wordjip is so good. If you're ever in Koreatown in New York City on 32nd Street and you need an affordable lunch.
Affordable.
It's gonna be quick.
Delicious.
Delicious.
And a really weird like punch card system.
They stopped doing the punch card system.
Oh, you could like you if you like spent like $7,000 there, you can get like a stone bowl.
Oh, maybe actually no. I think they do that still because they have the bowls out.
And I had so many points and I lost them. You know me. I like to get points and cards and then never use them.
Yeah, you are a big points and cards guy. You one time gave me what was it like 15 fully punched coffee cards after I lost my job,
which I'm glad that you used them.
I used them all.
Yeah, Gorilla went out, or I guess it just moved.
Huh? Yeah. Anyway, big energy. Big New York energy in this movie.
Yeah, BNY. New York energy.
And I'll also say, maybe it does look like a set, but their apartment, kind of a realistic New York City apartment for a movie.
Totally.
They've got like a weird sink in the kitchen. The sink's like kind of up and it's like across a weird narrow space from the stove. They've got that like... the sort of garden, like the bedroom has like a window to the kitchen, but like it's through some French doors, like pretty realistic, strange New York apartment.
Yeah. Really weird. Did you ever have like, what was your weirdest New York apartment feature?
Weirdest New York. Okay. Probably I'm trying to think. Well, two that probably tie. My first apartment was like, I always say it's like 5.5 people. I had like 4 roommates, but one was an intern and was only there for part of the summer. And the other one was someone's girlfriend who kind of stayed over. And another guy was an RA at Juilliard and he was sometimes there. So it was like a revolving door of people.
Yeah.
And my room was only big enough to fit a twin bed.
Yeah.
And the only windows opened up to the shaft of the building.
Yeah, that was my first room.
Yeah. But it would blow in like black dirt all the time. And I had a brand new Mac Pro with the tower and I had the white keyboard and like by the end of the summer the keyboard was just gray.
Oh man.
Yeah, that was mine.
I had one of those like kitchens where like the cabinets you couldn't open a single cabinet because they would open into the other side of the kitchen. It was like a kitchen that like you could like I could barely squeeze my ass into.
Yeah, yeah.
And like none of the cabinets down below would open because like they would always just bang against it.
Yeah.
Like, why did you even put doors on these things?
Yeah. How they have those like French doors with the glass that.
Yeah.
I had an apartment where I lived on the other side of those in a room that was probably supposed to be a dining room, but there was like our den where the TV was, and then there were the glass doors that I had hung up some shades, and then my friend and his boyfriend lived in the really tiny room through my room.
Okay.
So they would walk through my room with the glass doors and go into their room.
Yeah.
It was like right there.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I love those New York like.
It's kind of funny because it's like it's kind of terrible. And also like talking about it, this is just nostalgia, but it kind of makes me miss it. I'm like, I don't know if I'll have that level of it again.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes me want it again.
I know.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some iconic scenes. Let's talk about the blue sweaters.
Yeah.
So that scene to me, I think I've seen it like if you Google blue sweater scene, it's very recognizable.
Yeah.
And this is one thing I noticed. This movie has great just monologues.
Yeah.
Like Miranda has the monologue there where she's like, oh, you think all this stuff, you're just unaffected by it. And you bought this sweater just because you're trying to tell the world that you don't care about what you don't know.
Right.
And she gives the whole history and then basically is like, this was handpicked by people in this room from a pile of stuff and you had no idea.
Yeah.
So solid.
So solid. And like, such
it kind of understands, kind of explains the fashion industry.
Yeah. Such a great, like when you can take a monologue like that and establish the character, not just as like, cause her actions established her as sinister and like not mean. Mm-hmm. And then like one short dialogue, you also establish her as like a genius, intelligent, like meta. Mm-hmm. Then I just think that's like such a good, well written, mm-hmm. well played out scene. It's a great scene.
It is. There's another monologue she gives.
She has the one about hiring her. As like, you know, I chose you.
That's right.
You were different, and like I wanted to give you a shot, and that almost disappoints me more.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, once again, you give Streep a line of text like that, dude, and it's just like good night
all day.
Wrap it up.
The Tooch monologue where he tells her to quit. It's more of a scene, but he has some like kind of mono stuff in there. That's really good too.
Yeah.
He plays so, they do a good job, like you just said, of writing the characters to where you can tell that he understands that she's Miranda Priestley and you do not get in her way.
Right.
But you can tell that she respects him.
Yeah.
Because in that one scene, she's like, is it too much? And he's like, you know, oh, this thing from last year. No, I thought that too, but with the right accessories. And like, you see that she respects him,
yeah,
to a certain level. And the same way that Miranda is like totally sinister, but then it's all in the service of bringing this like fashion about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so exactly. It feels earned.
Yeah.
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 Really, really great. I also, when Adrian Grenier walks out right before we cut it off, when he walks out of the restaurant, I don't think we learn little bits about like his restaurant career. He's supposed to be, you know, like a promising young chef.
Yeah.
But they do so many little chefy things to really like bump out the fact that chef. Did you notice when he walks out of the restaurant, like all tired after shift, he goes, hey, take care of that finger. Like someone, you know, probably cut their finger on the line. He's like, take care of that finger.
Take care of that
finger. See you guys later.
Oh my God.
I'll say this. I don't like their relationship.
No, right out of the gates.
Right out of the gates. Yeah. Do not like it. He's kind like of a jerk.
A dick.
He is a little bit of a dick.
Yeah.
He kind of belittles her job a little bit. Yeah.
And it's like, what chef doesn't smoke Parliament Lights? Like he'd be smoking P-Funks all night.
All the time. He would be ripping them.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say this. Cooking world and cooking shows are little like more popular now. The Bear. I don't know if you watch The Bear.
I haven't yet, but I need
God, you would love The Bear.
Yeah.
It's all about Chicago.
That's where I'm from. And Italian beef sandwiches are my favorite sandwich.
Yeah. You would love it. But you know, it's, and also like you love restaurant stuff.
Yeah.
But people have said, you know, dating a chef, you know, they can be kind of like gruff people because it's just a hard working life.
Yeah.
So like Adrian Grenier, like maybe like that.
Yeah.
But it seems like he seems dismissive.
Being gruff and like having a hard working life is one thing, but having contempt to the person that you're in a relationship with is different.
Absolutely.
And like that's what, whenever someone like, they say like rolling your eyes is a sign of contempt, and that's like contempt is a sign of like a relationship that's going to fail. Like that's a completely different beast. And like being like, I had a shitty day, like leave me alone. Like that's shitty, but that's different than like not taking what your partner is doing seriously.
Yeah.
That's contempt.
And just being, not only being like in a supportive way, like who are these girls?
Yeah.
But more being like, who are these girls? This whole thing sounds stupid.
Exactly.
That's like kind of where he's
You're
coming
stupid.
From. I know.
Yeah.
You wasted Medellin, Medellin. Nobody saw it.
No one saw that shit.
You wasted all this money and the cheese. Hey, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Cause I was going to wrap it up.
One quick story that I will say from the world that this is based on.
Yeah.
So Miranda Priestley, this happened, you and some friends of ours were away on like a summer work trip thing. We're out in the Hamptons.
Yeah.
I had some remote work stuff going on, and, there was like an emergency, not emergency. There was just like a big meeting that was like, hey, we all got to get on this meeting. There's like some announcements, whatever. And I didn't want to be late, especially because like I was working remote and, you know, not sure how the internet's going to be.
Yeah.
Wanted to like show up and everything. And so, and like you've said, one of the most true things about me, Corey Cabin, 5 minutes late. So I was like, can't be late to this,
yeah,
you know, big work meeting. So sign into the work meeting, my Zoom's not working. I reload it. I'm like freaking out and I'm like, all right, I'm just going to get in here. And a thing came in that was like, there's Zoom problems. So everyone's kind of doing it. And I was like, I'm just going to get it set up. I don't want to deal, you know, I got to just get in there. So I get in and it's like, you've been admitted to the Zoom room, and I get in and there's four squares, and one square is black and one square is an assistant, and the other square is Miranda Priestley. the real Miranda Priestley.
It's just the four of us.
and I had my camera on. I was like, and then
what?
And then I signed out.
did you signed out?
Yeah, I signed out. I was like, I'm going back in when the meeting starts. I'm not just gonna and you know, like, it was just the four of us in there. That's the weird thing about Zoom is, like, you know, if you and, you know, Barack Obama needed to, like, be on a Zoom with 30 people,
yeah,
you and Obama sign in at the same time.
We're the only two.
It's you and Barry.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just us, and she was, like, you know, adjusting her thing, trying to figure out her thing, and I guess whoever the real life Andy was, yeah, was also in there.
Oh my gosh, I've never heard that story. That's amazing.
But that was at,
and then
that
you
was,
signed out too.
That was out in the Hamptons, and then I was, like, sitting at the
table. Yeah, like Harlan walking by, yeah, wearing a floaty or something like that.
And I was, like, at the kitchen table. I was like, gotta sign out
later.
Anyway,
thank you so much, dude, for listening. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey.
This is a main feed.
Main feed.
If you want to hear the rest of Devil Wears Prada, where it'll be on our Patreon.
Yep.
And we've got tons of other movies on there. Mm-hmm. We have some merch coming out. Mm-hmm. Patrons get notified of merch first. Yeah. And also, it's just a great way to keep in touch with us, and we love keeping in touch with you.
Basically, we want to be Andy, and we want you to be Miranda Priestley, mm-hmm, and we want your jacket to be money, mm-hmm, and then we want you to throw it at us as you're heading to the office
all the time
for a subscription to our Patreon.
Toss it at us,
and if you could just do that, we'll make a montage and we'll both be happy.
Yep, do that, and then just say, why is my coffee not here? all right,
later taters.
The Bradshaw Boys stars Corey Cabin, Kevin James Doyle, and John Sieber. The show is produced by me, Jeremy Balin, and narrated by Katie Sieber. This podcast is part of the Seltzer Kings Network. Check out all their great podcasts at seltzerkings.com. You can find the boys on their socials at The Bradshaw Boys or on their website at bradshawboys.com. And as always, if you see them in the street, tip your glass. Thanks for listening.
Elephant, take us away.
Baby, let's sing together. Do your ears hang?
Oh my gosh, it does it!
Can you tie them in a knot? Can you tie them in a...
Later, taters.